Right, good afternoon everyone. Welcome back to the afternoon session. And in the morning we were looking at five different ethical theories. And in the afternoon session we're going to try to put those theories into practice by having two topical debates. And this is a more participative part of the day than the morning. The first debate we're going to have is on the subject, should we experiment on animals? And what's going to happen is that first Ben and then Michael are going to talk to that topic each for 5 minutes, no more than 5 minutes. Ben's going first and then Michael straight after that, no questions in between. And then it's over to you for your questions. So that's it really. Now I, as chairman, I'm not going to be operating Marianne's system of trying to catch everybody's eye, so it's going to be, you haven't got to try to catch my eye while the speakers are speaking. We'll just do it by a sort of show of hands. If you've got a question at the end of the two speeches, stick your hand up. Is everyone okay with those arrangements?
When you talk about animals,
do
they include human beings?
Well, that's up to the. That's a nice question to start the day with. We'll see how the speakers respond to that. Ben, you'd like to start.
I thought that I would really get it last time. There is nothing wrong with killing animals or causing them pain. There is often something wrong with people who choose to do it. It's not wrong for a tiger to eat a lamb. The idea of a Christian carnivore for failure to subscribe to a viewpoint beyond its rational grasp is obviously nonsense. To answer the point raised a minute ago, I'm taking the term animal experimentation to refer to processes carried out by human beings in order to discover facts that were previously unknown and uncertain. Eating meat is not normally experimental, and I assume that animal means a living animal, at least at the start of the experiment. And the bullets is kept in mind, they might pass an animal experiment, trying to design leather shoes or place the shepherd's pie wound. And I am assuming we're talking about animals that are not human. Probably including babies as well. Categorize our knowledge into the world as sensible and intelligible. And I think we're entitled to assume that non-human animals do not have the faculty of reason. The cat would obviously allow them access to sensory levels. They can respond appropriately to sensory stimuli. And I think he and I agree that there is no reason to suppose that the intelligible world is accessible to non-humans, if you get the distinction between sensible and intelligible. From a sensible point of view, I think it's overwhelmingly likely that non-human animals feel pain, yet from the intelligible point of view, I'm far less certain how they understand the experience. It's almost a nonsense question to ask whether a slug is a masochist. But the wrongness of the act, which requires getting the meaning from nothing wrong with killing animals, the wrongness of the act is in the decision that I make to do it, I'm not interested in the consequences. The distinction between sensitive and sensitive is also important because it distinguishes murder like cats from manslaughter like. The relevant moral issue is not what I do, but what I choose to do. And acting without choice is obviously morally innocuous. So, as I mentioned this morning, you jump out of the building and landing on somebody. Well, I don't see that. There's recklessness, which is distinct from actual moral evil. As an individual, I'm morally fallible because I'm intellectually fallible. I might be faced with a moral dilemma tomorrow, again something I mentioned this morning, that I can't possibly think out in advance all the dilemmas that might come up to me fast enough to be able to deal with it. But to count as an animal experiment rather than just willfully abusing them, I think the experiment has to be planned activity. You have to know what you're doing and thinking before you start, which is why you have an animal experimenter in a real sense has much more responsibility for what he's doing than a normal individual where you might be acting on just notice. It's this obligation to think what I'm doing that means that I am not totally bothered with animal experiments, because I don't do them. I don't have a responsibility to really think it through except abstractly this afternoon. But if I were doing it, presumably for a living, I would have much more responsibility, and I'm not confident. I think that's what the general thinking is, that all these experiments are also thought as a good thing. And I also have a very unphilosophical feeling that a lot of that is experimentation, whereas academic experiments, how do brains or bodies work, might be justifiable. An awful lot of experiments are more commercial experiments, and we can't produce it. If you don't have a great need for some new sort of shampoo, the experiment is the commercial benefit of the organisation providing it, rather than any more justifiable overall outcome, flourishing or yeah, but at most basic, now I'm experiment will be good in the doctor asking, has it hurt? With a reasonable expectation, it will hurt. I can easily believe that acting against the creature's immediate desires, but in favour of his long-term interests, might be a universal life of the world. Not least because I would appreciate it for myself. But it's the way we understand the world. If you would understand the world as well as I do, you would behave as well as I do. I wouldn't torture animals because I can see the logic not behaving this way. But if you understand the world better than I do, you might be able to convince me not to eat meat. I do in fact eat meat. And the problem I'm trying to highlight is that most people, most of the time, seem to in fact believe the majority is right. I can't really justify my own decision to eat meat, but anyway, yes. Accepting practice is in fact accepted. And it's easy to live the world by, for example, with everybody else. And trying to continue to wonder whether the world is flat or constant wondering, basically, and constant thinking about things, basically. And I think, to just sum up quickly, a lot of animal experimentation, so what we want to admit, has not been given enough consideration. And it's me considering not anything about the welfare of the animal, which I really can't work.
Okay, thank you very much. Michael,
Well, unlike Ben, I'm not constrained by broad principles. My starting point is an argument put forward by Peter Singer in an article entitled "All Animals Are Equal." Well, as you may guess, the term "animal" here covers not only what used to be called brutes, but also humans. Now, the term equality obviously needs to be qualified, since non-human animals differ markedly from humans, not only in terms of physiological capabilities, but also cognitive capabilities. Now, Singer laments that many philosophers have accepted a principle of equal consideration of interests, but goes further that they've failed to see the principle applies to other species and not just humans. Singer justifies the application to animals of the principle of equality of consideration of interests by pointing out that animals are capable of suffering and capable of enjoyment. So he argues the principle of equality here requires that if any being is suffering, that suffering must be given the same weight as the suffering of any other being. To do otherwise, particularly if you put human interests above those of non-human animals, for Singer is to commit the sin of speciesism. Now, Singer underlines his point by reference to racism and sexism, and he argues that even if it were ever shown that genetic differences existed between ethnic groups or between the sexes, that would be of no consequence whatsoever with regard to the question of equality. The principle of equality is a moral prescription, not a description that depends on intelligence, physical strength, or like matters of fact. So, on this principle of Singer, it would be morally wrong to test for the safety of new pharmaceuticals on animals, because that presupposes that the well-being of humans overrides the harm done to laboratory animals. Now, one response to Singer has been developed by a philosopher called R.G. Frey, and he has a view which is encapsulated by three propositions. One, non-human animal life has some value. Two, not all non-human animal life has the same value. Three, human life is more valuable than non-human animal life. So proposition one acknowledges that non-human animals are morally significant. Proposition two recognizes, for example, that the life of higher mammals, e.g. chimpanzees or tigers, is more valuable than that, say, of mollusks or ants. Proposition three is justified by Frey by reference to the variety and richness of the life of a normal adult human being compared with to the life of a non-human animal. Frey suggests that humans are autonomous in a way that non-human animals cannot be. Human flourishing can take forms that transcend the mere satisfaction of basic animal needs such as nourishment, sex, and freedom to roam. Now, this does not deny that inflicting pain on other creatures is regrettable. However, when this occurs in research experiments on animals, some people may seek justification in the unequal values of animal lives and the lives of the human beneficiaries of the research. Now, this argument has a rather nasty sting in its tail, for not all human beings enjoy rich lives. There are sadly humans who, perhaps owing to some congenital misfortune, have cognitive capacities that are less than those of non-human primates, for example. If one is in favour of experiments on animals, and if the incapacity of animals to enjoy rich life is the justification, Frey asks the thorny question as to how one can deny the conclusion that experiments may also be carried out on humans who are similarly incapacitated. Frey thinks that the conclusion is unavoidable. The conclusion, though unpalatable it seems, chimes with the discussion in the Singer article. Singer is considering the vivisectionist challenge to the person seeking the abolition of animal experiments. So this challenge goes, would the abolitionist, that's a person who doesn't want animal experiments, be prepared to let thousands die if they could be saved by experimenting on a single animal? To this hypothetical question, Singer responds with one of his own. Would the vivisectionist be prepared to carry out his experiment on an orphaned human infant? The point of orphaned is to remove any considerations based on parental concern. Singer contends that a negative answer would show that the vivisectionist is discriminating unjustifiably because, and here I quote Singer, adult apes, cats, mice, and other mammals are more aware of what is happening to them, more self-directing, and, so far as we can tell, at least as sensitive to pain as any human infant. And that contentious point, I think I'll stop.
Thank you very much, Michael. Right. Who would like to start?
Two simple thought experiments I'd like to put to both of you. It's very, very obvious. But if you're a fireman climbing into an upstairs bedroom to put out a fire, and you found a baby and you found a kitten, and you could rescue one but not both, which one would you rescue?
You're just trying to get them out of the window. You're just throwing the kitten out of the window because they can fall in this.
I would rescue the baby myself.
Right, but
how
about the two gentlemen who would
I think on both views, here you've got the point that the baby has potential, that the human infant has potential. The kitten's potential is, in comparison, much more restricted. So at its best, the adult cat into which it would grow has a less valuable life than the potential life that the infant could come to enjoy.
Okay.
So on Fraser's argument, that would be the case. I think on this particular issue, I think Singer would also have to agree, possibly for the same reasons. The difficulty that comes in, if you've got a kitten and a human being who is perhaps, in the technical term, an imbecile, who has no life prospects beyond his current state, then the question becomes a little bit more difficult. I think, for reasons which I could elaborate later, I think that the answer must be that you save the human.
Right. So we're agreed that the human life is more valuable than the cat. So similar for the experiment. You do the experiment on the cat, you save the human life. You don't do the experiment on the cat, the human dies. Same for the experiment, so presumably you have to arrive at the same conclusion. You do the experiment on the cat, you save the human. Is there any complication there that I've missed that would actually change that round? That our moral instinct or moral imperative is to save the human.
But the experiment on the cat is voluntary, right? The fire wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're not you're connected. Forced to your sudden position. And my thought immediately, obviously, there's a child and there's a kitten up here, I'm going to rescue the child. Mm. And then I think a bit longer. Which is what I was saying about often not having time to do this. It could be that giving the child, given there some time, it's going to live a miserable life as a, you know, badly burnt, if you've seen them. It might be my wisest thing to do would be to put the child out of its misery. I don't know. And that's where the moral tension, I mean, I'm picking a bit of straw here, but you can see that trying to discuss something like this in the abstract with hundreds of heads about and trying to work it out is not quite the same as actually really being.
That's why I'm trying to keep it simple and simple for the experiment. In both situations, you sacrifice the animal to save the human.
Yeah, and if I can come in from the chair here, I don't think that your second case is equivalent to the first at all. I don't think one follows from the other. The deliberate infliction of pain on the cat in the experiment, that's a different situation from who you're going to save in the fire. It's not the same thing at all. It's not the same thing. Okay, so that's a really interesting point to put us on the spot. Phil, oh, and then
I'll just follow on from that, I guess. It seems to me this case of the thought experiment, would you choose the cat or the baby? And firstly, it seems to me that everybody can choose the baby. And it seems to me that that demonstrates that we're wrong in thinking that morality is some kind of calculus concerning reason, rational deduction, such as why Christians reject it. And that in fact, our moral decisions are based on emotional reaction.
Species determined if you were a cat and say,
I think that's absolutely. I mean, one's emotional reaction is to say the child, it is the child, is one of us. It is not. That doesn't arise from rationality, it arises from the way I'm constructed.
That's why my brother tried to go, if you did try to be completely rational, there are circumstances where you might come up with the wrong answer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Anne?
The only time in my life I ever got a piece accepted by an Orthodox philosophy journal was on the difference, back in the Royal Institute of Philosophy journal, on the difference between pain and suffering. It was a long time ago. And what I was arguing is that pain and suffering are different. That humans and cats, as a nice example, can both experience pain, but only humans can experience suffering. And the reason I was arguing that was that only humans can give meaning to what is happening to them. And therefore, if you can give meaning to it, you can either suffer or not suffer, when they're in pain, I mean, masochists, presumably, choosing to be in pain. So, I remember, of course, when I was long ago, quite a lot of the studies which have been done with the different levels of pain which people are prepared to put up with in medical situations, depending upon how they're interpreting what it is that's happening to them.
The difference, what you're actually saying there, is well, the difference between human animals and non-human animals, but in fact, the difference between me and everything else.
No, it's the difference between an entity, which I would call a human person, that can give meaning to what has happened to it, and an entity like a cat or anything else, which can't. Both can have suffered pain. One can experience pain.
Yes, only one can experience pain, but I don't know if you can really suffer. I can learn to function. But if I'm actually forcing the point, the distinction is not between us humans and the rest, but between me and anybody, anything else.
But anybody else can't suffer because it's a person against a person, which is a thing given, able to give meaning to what's happening to them. Jesus presumably would have suffered had he not gone to Calvary. You know what I mean? Because suffering is something that involves meaning. Whereas,
and the whole issue is about saying, because if I did rescue the cat instead of the child, then I would suffer, thinking, I didn't do the right thing there.
Okay. Marianne, you?
Can I start from, I assume that we're not including pain here, because when I include the pain of the fire, etc., so can we assume that both the kitten and the human being are unconscious? If they die, they won't feel pain. And then I asked, well, okay, I think you're right, we would all rescue the baby, but the question we're really interested in is should we? Not would we? And little thought experiment for myself here, you all know how I adore my cat, you all know how I adore my mum. If it was my cat and my mum in her current situation in this house, and neither is going to feel pain, I would rescue my mum, should I?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not actually convinced I should. I think this is a real...
I think this is the thing about the experiment, because what you're talking about is getting yourself out of a position, a moral dilemma that could be anywhere else. But in an experiment, it's deliberately set up. We are going to take otherwise free animals and think, right, chop your legs off because you get a benefit greater than that by doing something else.
But can you really separate what is right from our ability to reflect on it? I mean, we can all agree on what we would do, but that's an is question, and it's an ought question that we're looking at.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go to you next, and then you, and then Eileen. Yeah.
Thank you. One thing that we're making an assumption here is that the question under debate is, should we experiment on animals to benefit humans? But about 30 years ago, veterinary anaesthesia of cats carried a very high mortality indeed. And if you wanted to anaesthetize a cat, there was a good chance that it would die on the operating table. And work was done to develop a much safer anaesthetic for cats. And I wonder whether that's an interesting thought experiment. Mm. Is it, because it kind of refines the cat and baby question, is it okay to use 10 cats to benefit thousands upon thousands of cats in the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good word.
My question is, what do we say about the morality of those societies that kill other animals, like monkeys and dogs, for food?
Mm. This is why I was so keen at beginning to distinguish experimenting from other moral dilemmas and other animals, because we have much more responsibility to get it right if you're taking an animal healthy get into the lab to start shopping than you would have if you find yourself in a burning building or if you just start something different for dinner.
Yeah, but I'm going to jump in here because we're talking about experimenting on animals. Right. So just to try and sort of restrict the debate a little bit.
I want to throw in something else to help. I hope.
Go on.
I think we are guilty of speciesism, actually. Mm. Interesting. I think we are. I mean, we probably have to be, because it's pretty obvious not that one was lethal. And we're guilty of speciesism because, in general, human beings are operating at a very significantly higher level than other animals. Mm. However, we also make an additional political assumption, which I entirely approve of, but it's not necessarily warranted by the facts, and that is you make a political decision to treat all human beings with the highest possible respect and equally. And I would argue that that is a very, very important political decision, and that actually overrides many others. Very important political. And so I would always choose the human. I would be uninterested in arguments like the human is terribly disabled, because my overriding principle would be it's a human. But I think that we are guilty of speciesism. I think that's kind of inevitable.
Mm. It's inevitable, but we've got... I want to come back to Marianne's point. When you say it's inevitable, is that... Are you saying you're okay because with that? That's the question of what we ought to be.
I think the political decision to treat all animals as equal would be lost in a complete absurdity. The idea that you treat an animal as equal with a human is kind of ridiculous.
Yes.
So the decision to treat all human beings as equal is very, very important politically. It's not true, of course. Not all human beings are really equal, but the decision to treat them as all equal and their lives as sacred sort of things is a sort of overwhelming political imperative, I would argue. But we don't have that same imperative than ours.
Can I just go on here? You say it's a political motivation. I think actually it's a moral motivation. Phil, in a throwaway line, said the baby in this scenario would be one of us. And I think you have to think in terms of the moral community. It's the community in which you are situated and defines the members to which you have a moral obligation. Now, some people say, well, the community is defined by the fact of its members having reciprocal obligations and therefore rights. Now, that still doesn't get you quite over the fray point that there are some human beings who, because of incapacity, can't generate obligations, they can't fulfill obligations. Does that mean they don't have any rights? Well, I would say no. If a community is a truly moral community, it surely has also built in the concept of insurance against mishap. And a person is incapacitated through either congenital or man-made or natural mishaps. And therefore, I think the role of a moral community would be to extend the protection and, in other words, sort of give these people certain rights, irrespective. It's the old, there but for the grace of God go I kind of motivation. So I think it's a moral as much as a political thing. And I think this idea of moral community overcomes the fray objection based on, say, the animal and the incapacitated human.
Yeah. I'm going to take Peter next, and then David, and then you. Peter?
My point is being sort of gradually made by a number of people.
Yeah.
Couch it specifically as a virtue, and say a word for the virtue of loyalty, that the notion of being loyal to other human beings is being cast around the room, sometimes labelled as speciesism and as sort of crime. And if it isn't a crime to be loyal to your species, then it's irrational, I've heard. It seems to me to be neither. It seems to me loyalty to your own species seems to me to be a virtue. I mean, it's actually essential to human beings to be loyal. I trust we're all loyal to the Philosophical Society. If you hear the Philosophical Society insulted in Newcastle, I expect you to leap to its defence. This extends to my attitude to babies in rooms full of burning chimpanzees and all the rest of it. You know, one of us. I not only do I think that's a virtue, it doesn't override my respect for animals. I think one can, you know, introduce that, and that extends beyond it. But some sort of primitive loyalty to one's own species seems to me, first of all, a virtue, and secondly, I'm not going to, you know, expand on it, but you know, I'm sure I can give a rational account of it. It just seems to me that you can't live a good communal virtuous life without having a loyalty to your own species, and you try to ought to have it.
Yeah. Okay, right, that's a well more.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to use there. A new word actually for sentientism. Mm-hmm. It's to do with such that the size of animals. I'm sure none of you are hurt or contemplate killing a human being. Would you kill a cow in order to have the beef? When we get down to mice and spiders and flies, we probably will get rid of them without too much of a problem. It's not just the size though, there's a sort of feeling that they're really not conscious enough, and really following on from what Marion said, they don't have a sort of feeling about life and a reason for what is happening to them or what is going to happen. Now, the 2000 Nobel Prize for Science or Medicine was won by Eric Kandel, using a water snail, a plesiosaur. And he chose that because it had very simple neural structure and large neurons and so on. And of course, as a result of his experiments, which involved putting probes into the neural system and so on, and training these animals to do things, we have learned an awful lot about the way memory works, about, for those of us that have somewhat graying hair, the possibility that our synapses will actually increase and that new dendrites will actually grow in our brain. But very important sort of discoveries to do with this. My real question is, we've talked about different sorts of animals. Is there a dividing line between animals that we are prepared to do experiments on and those that we're not, based on our sort of almost anthropomorphic feelings about what they are feeling?
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, well, that's another. Yeah.
You mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the things that Anne said, it was that animals couldn't suffer, but it seems to me that why should we care about their pain unless the suffering involved as well? I mean, that's the. To me, why should you not be cruel to a cow or a cat or whatever? It's because they suffer, that's the important thing. And how can you judge whether an animal is suffering? It's, I guess, only because you can anthropomorphize to a certain extent. I mean, when you're making a judgment about whether an animal is suffering, it's trying to put yourself in their place.
On that point, the dolphin that's gave the timeout, presumably understood suffering.
No experiments are done on dolphins.
Yeah.
It's legal.
But it's the problem with suffering.
Okay.
And
I was just thinking at the point about suffering that Hoffman said, some people like opera, and some people like soap opera. And sitting somebody in front of the wrong one can make you suffering. I can't tell which of you are which. You're adult human beings in my own society. Someone else can make a judgment about Morpheus. He's got acts to get at it. Decisions about non-human animals.
Well, you could make that judgment not by beforehand, but by the fact that what you see them do at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
If they're struggling to get out of it, you know, they're suffering.
Yeah,
just a bit on this one, from a moral particularist point of view, surely it makes a difference. Does it make a difference? A, what the order of animal involved is, as was pointed out over there, but also what the nature of the experiment is. I mean, 90% of experiments done on animals are simple surface skin scratches about allergens.
Right.
And we do those on ourselves all the time in doctor's surgeries. So that's animal experimentation. And on the other hand, sticking a steel plate in a monkey's head and inserting things into its brain and putting drops in its eyes is another form of animal experiment.
Yeah.
And the other variable, of course, is what the person of the experiment is.
Yeah.
Is it to help Unilever make a better shampoo, or is it trying to cure cancer?
Yeah.
So I think all of those variables, but from a particularist point of view, probably, as a matter of degree, make some experiments acceptable and others not.
Yeah. So are there some experiments you would allow then?
Well,
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. They get right at the back.
Could I say that I think some degrees what matters is the nature of the human I have heard people say that if they saw a human now creating a child or an animal, they'd kill it. The human.
Okay. Peter?
Well, what is so special about experiments? I mean, for centuries, horses have been trained and dogs trained by use of pain and reward. We kill animals to eat them. The rules are now such that no more suffering is inflicted on an animal in an experimental situation than is inflicted on a lamb going to slaughter. So it seems to me the whole experiment thing is a bit of a command.
I took that experiment to be, if you're regularly slaughtering lambs, you've experimented with a few to work out the quickest, easiest way to kill them with as little pain as possible. But the point of the experiment, you don't really know what's happening. And if you're experimenting on an animal meaningfully, you could do things like, what happens if you give this as a drug? But it's not knowing what is going on in the animal. If you know what's going on, it doesn't have an experiment. That's why I ruled out these sorts of levels.
But anybody who's ever had an animal, trained an animal, looked after an animal, is very, very sensitive to that animal's suffering or otherwise. I mean, the fact is, all our pets, we know when they're happy and when they're not unhappy.
But that's interesting. You get your laboratory rats, and I get this rat in there, it's where it lands, but that's what I can't get to the
personality of each rat. I want to come back to, if I can, to Peter's made a strong point a few minutes ago, to which there seems to be a lot of assent against the concept of speciesism, which is absolutely fundamental to Peter Singer's argument, really. If you don't accept that speciesism is wrong, then I think his argument probably falls flat. And I wonder what, in general, whether you agreed what Peter was saying just then, that we should be loyal to our own.
Or
is there any, as I'm declaring my hand, as it were, I would say, there must be some reason for treating animals differently from humans other than simply membership of the same race, of a different race. And so I'm just wondering, on the whole, in this room, would people agree with what Peter said over there about loyalty? Right. Michael, in his original presentation, was talking about the argument of speciesism, right, which Peter Singer would hold is a bad thing, to treat animals differently from humans just because, by virtue of the fact that we are members of a different species, just as in the same way as we condemn racism or sexism, so we should condemn speciesism. That's what Peter Singer's saying. And Peter over there was saying, that's wrong, we should have a loyalty to our own species.
Can I say, really differently to speciesism and all the other isms that you mentioned? All the other isms, racism, sexism, homophobic, all the problems, they're all differences within the species ourselves. Speciesism is something other than that. It's the difference between us and others.
Okay,
Bill? I'd like to suggest that it's not a question of whether speciesism is wrong. You don't find the sort of moral choices whether we be speciesist or not. We have no choice but to be species, because that's the way we are constructed as animals. As animals, we have an empathetic response, and it's primarily an empathetic response towards others of our social group.
Well, we could, I think we could choose.
Can I just say that when the man over there said,
yes, we're guilty of speciesism. I felt that, and I have done since 20 years ago when he went swimming. But there's nothing, I second Peter absolutely. Guilt doesn't come into it. Yeah, I feel really. It's a moral duty to make what Peter Singer calls speciesism.
I think you can introduce another cause of which is more uncomfortable. Imagine we make contact with another civilization somewhere else, in Alpha Centauri, and it is perfectly obvious that they are our equal in terms of their capability to think and have affection, build societies, but they're not our species. I would then feel entirely unhappy about being speciesist. I think we would have to extend towards them exactly the same respect as we extend towards all human beings. So I think speciesism is acceptable to me only because, in general, these animals are operating in a completely different way.
Well, take the situation of a wartime thing, and some soldiers on one side are rushing through the streets with bayonets, and about the bayonet, someone who's on your side. And then, are you supposed to sit and think, now, is that young soldier's life, although he's on the other side, more important than this old lady or this woman? Do you choose the one that's on your side anyway? If it comes to it.
Is that an argument for pacifism?
No, I'm not trying to, I'm just saying, you're asking me to choose this person, like with the aliens. We mightn't need to be against them, we could just be friends, but if it came to a fight between them, I suppose I'd still think we'd have to sit with our own.
I think it's an issue here, and that's just a racism. There are two sorts of racism. There's the his face is the same color as mine, so I'm not going to do with him, which I don't think has really been guilty of. And there's the all those races are all the same, so I'll treat them like men. And just ignore differences, which a lot of non-white people feel in London, they're being treated as though they're all white, and they're not. They want their own places of worship or whatever. We ought to be treating creatures, different species, differently, appropriately differently, because they are different.
Okay, I'm going to close this shortly. Marianne, I know you wanted to say something. Are you dealt with? Do you want to come back and have a final say, Michael?
No, I think it's all been said.
All right.
We should have gone to tea at 3:15.
Yeah.
So, I left the next session, I think how short we probably ought to stop now.
Yeah, I'm just about to, yeah. Okay. Is that all right, everybody? Well, thank you very much. Just to be on the